This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 1st, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the University of Arkansas unveils its newest outreach vehicle, a converted Winnebago called the Green Mobile Solar Energy Laboratory. And the Trail Mix Concert Tour, an outdoor musical event that has become a staple during Artisphere, returns. We learn about the event's expansion into Benton County and get a preview of this year's participating bands. Plus, we preview the May Festival of the Arts in Eureka Springs, which kicks off today. But first, we begin with a couple of other items worth noting. The nonprofit group Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families is speaking out against recent budget cuts made to state child abuse prevention programs. Department of Human Services is faced with $2.2 million in funding cuts from the federal government and says it was a hard choice, but prevention programs had to be cut to keep caseworkers investigating reports of abuse. Jennifer Ferguson of Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families says cutting prevention will cause more problems in the long run.
It's a double-edged sword when you start talking about cutting prevention funding, because what will happen is more kids will end up in the system, which is going to increase the caseload, you know, for the workers there, and they're going to have less time to devote to children. So that's obviously going to put more children's, you know, safety at risk.
Ferguson says she's not sure where else the state could have made the cuts, but says it certainly shouldn't be children in the foster care system. The new head of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission says he's confident the amount of natural gas drilling in the state's Fayetteville Shale will increase. A drop in natural gas prices has led to the slowdown in new drilling. In an interview with Arkansas Business, Grant Tenniel said he'd like to get more Arkansans trained in the industry to fill jobs once the increase happens.
It's going to come back. The price is going to move. I don't think anybody can tell us when, and it may be 2 or 3 years before it does. But one of the things that's important to me is that when it does start to move and when activity does begin to pick up again, that we can fill more of those available jobs with Arkansans and rely less on contractors who are coming in from Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas.
For that to happen, Tenniel says the state needs to get a unified curriculum among schools that train people to work in the natural gas industry. We'll have more from Tenniel with regard to the governor's recent trip to China later on the program. Fort Smith City Administrator Ray Gossick has been selected to lead the Arkansas City Management Association for the 2012-2013 fiscal year. The association is a subsidiary of the Arkansas Municipal League and has close to 40 members from municipal governments with professional management, both mayor council cities and council manager cities, and from universities with graduate programs in public administration. The organization focuses on providing its members with training opportunities. The University of Arkansas women's golf team has been selected to participate in the NCAA Central Region Championship. The Razorbacks are making the program's 10th NCAA regional appearance and 9th consecutive in Arkansas history. The Razorbacks travel to the Scarlet Course, hosted by Ohio State May 10th through 12th, as regional action gets underway. The Razorbacks travel to the Scarlet Course, hosted by Ohio State May 10th through 12th, as regional action gets underway. Arkansas is coming off a runner-up finish at the 2012 SEC Championships, an event the Razorbacks hosted at Blessings Golf Course. The top 8 teams from each of the 3 NCAA regional sites will advance to the 2012 NCAA Championship, hosted by Vanderbilt May 22nd through the 25th. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals wrapped up an 8-game homestand with a win against the Arkansas Travelers yesterday. Carlo Testa belted 2 home runs to right field in the Naturals' 12-2 victory. The Nats took 3 wins in the 4-game series against their in-state rivals. The Naturals will be back in action this evening in Springfield with first pitch slated for 7:08.
Thank you.
Last week, Governor Mike Beebe and his economic development team returned from China, the governor's first trade trip to that country. What was the result, and what was it like being there, and where might things go next? To answer these questions, Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net recently sat down with Grant Tenniel, the newly appointed executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, to gain more insight on the trip, and Roby has this report.
Now, Grant, the governor said it was apparent that his presence was needed in business negotiations. Why in person? How's that different than a phone call or Skyping or something like that?
We figured out very quickly that personal relationships are everything to the Chinese, especially at the provincial government level. Some of our most productive meetings were the governor to provincial governor meetings that we had, and the conversations were incredibly wide-ranging, from potential Chinese investment in Arkansas to Arkansas investment in China, education, tourism. The conversations really ran the gamut, as you might expect, between governors.
The governor said there were two hot prospects, 11 economic development prospects in total that he met with. The governor really didn't put any timetable on successfully closing those deals. He said that we may not even close some of them. So tell me, what happens next to advance some of these prospects?
Well, as the governor mentioned, a couple of the prospects have already made trips to Arkansas, and I think we'll see some return trips in the very near future. I think that the most important thing for us to continue to do is to build on the relationships that the governor established while he was in China, to invite these CEOs and government officials to come to Arkansas and spend time here. And I think that we're really going to be focused on that. And I'll tell you that very quickly, we've already had one provincial government call us just in the last 2 days and tell us that they want to bring an education delegation over here maybe as soon as May.
Very interesting. Now, the governor alluded to his sales pitch for Arkansas, the workforce, geography, proximity to certain markets. Kind of give me an example of how that works. You walk into a room with representatives from a business prospect in China, and then what happens?
Well, first thing is that, as you might imagine, Arkansas has three big assets that start nearly every conversation in China. First, they all know that Walmart is headquartered in Bentonville. They all know Tyson Foods because Tyson is making large investments throughout China. And they all know the Clintons. And so every single conversation we had began with those three things. And then it was our job to explain that while those are obviously our three most famous exports, that Arkansas is really much more. Many of the companies and individuals that we met with understand the important geographical placement that Arkansas has in North America, and really its relationship to the entire hemisphere. And they're interested in us for that reason. We've got incredible transportation infrastructure with north-south and east-west interstate, with north-south and east-west rail, and in many cases dual rail served. We've got five navigable rivers with access to the Mississippi, which gives us access to the deep water ports in New Orleans and Mobile. And I think for many Chinese companies, their interest extends beyond the North American market when they look at Arkansas as a potential place to locate. I think they look at Arkansas and see the ability not only to reach markets within North America very, very easily, they look at Arkansas and they see the ability to reach into Central and South America relatively easily from a place that is much more stable.
France could be up next for the governor. He said it would be an agricultural-related trip if it happens. Are we talking agriculture as in row crop farmer or related to maybe the cattle or poultry industries?
Well, from what I know so far and what I can share with you, he has been approached by the French government and specifically the Minister of Agriculture over there to come and take part in a trip. And I think that it will include, the conversations will include both row crops and livestock.
All right, last question, Grant. So much focus for the future. You've got changes in technology and the interest of young workers, a lot more entrepreneurship, and small business creation is going to be very vital to moving the Arkansas, the U.S. economy forward in the future. Why is there not some level of state incentive similar to what we do for big business for small businesses and startups?
That's a great question, Roby, and it's one that I'm spending a lot of time with my team and other people talking about. You're exactly right. The tools that we've got in Arkansas in terms of incentives are very much designed for another era. They're designed for big iron manufacturing. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And they depend, in many cases, on our ability to claw back some asset that we can tie the incentive to, that if the business doesn't produce, doesn't perform, doesn't survive, you know, we can repossess the conveyor system or, you know, a press or something that the state can then market to recoup its money. When you talk about knowledge-based industries, the assets of these companies exist in the six-inch space between a bunch of smart people's ears. And you can't put a mortgage on a human being. And so we really are working very hard right now to try and understand how we recalibrate some of these tools to be able to play more effectively in that space. And we've done some of it. The difficulty is for government, these are risky endeavors, and we are talking about tax dollars. And, you know, government isn't really good at risk because taxpayers expect a return. And, you know, if you talk to any venture capitalist, they'll tell you they fire at 10 companies or 20 companies hoping that one of them will hit. And those aren't great odds for government. But it's something that we know is important and something that we know we've got to do a better job at.
You think we might see something by the 2013 session?
I think you might.
That was Grant Tenniel, the Executive Director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, speaking to Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks. More information at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon Communications store near you or online at vzw.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday afternoon, a new member was inducted into the Hall of Fame of the University of Arkansas's series of efforts to be green and sustainable. Ozarks at Large's Ithiagni Hotri Madolkar got a preview of the Green Mobile Solar Energy Laboratory and has this report.
We're expecting a bunch of people and there's not much space, so we are just going to send people through the vehicle and then we will have tables set up inside Engineering Hall to show off the experiments that we have designed.
Allison Brown is the manager for the Green Center at the University of Arkansas. We're on the Engineering Research Center, or the ENRC campus, located in South Fayetteville. A Winnebago recreational vehicle is parked near the main ENRC building, but it isn't what you think it is. The RV is a modified laboratory, a green mobile solar energy laboratory to be precise.
So on the driver's side, we have 6 230-watt solar panels. That's when they're operating at their maximum on a bright sunny day. And we have engineers from HiDEC have been working with us. They've built this system. Obviously, we don't usually mount solar panels on an RV. So they've built us this system. When we get somewhere and we want to put the panels up, we can unlock this and prop them up to the perfect angle to get the maximum sun exposure.
The 33-foot converted Winnebago is an attempt to introduce K-12 students in Arkansas to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields in a fun and interactive manner. Dr. Vasundhara Varadhan is a distinguished professor of electrical engineering at the University of Arkansas. She is also the director of the Green Center.
The National Science Foundation, as many of you know, is extremely interested in workforce development and STEM education. And we are all required to do an educational outreach program. So we conceived of the Green Mobile, a traveling solar energy laboratory that can travel to different parts of the state, especially to the distant, the rural areas on the east coast of the state.
Work began on procuring funds for the green vehicle in 2010, right after the National Science Foundation approved a $25 million grant to establish the Green Center on the U of A campus. The center works to develop new technology for high efficiency and inexpensive solar energy and to train a technical workforce to provide the state with a sustainable future in the solar power industry. The center has units on the University of Arkansas campuses in Fayetteville, Little Rock, Pine Bluff, and Fort Smith, as well as Philander Smith College in Little Rock.
Rails on it yet, but this is the inside of the Greenmobile. So basically, we just wanted to set it up like a laboratory would be set up in a classroom, but in an RV.
Allison Brown, the Green Center manager, gives me a tour of the inside of the green vehicle.
So when we bought the vehicle, it was totally empty, just the two seats up here and a bare wood floor. And we contracted to put this tiling down. We got cabinets and countertops put in. And we have this. This is the solar panel. It's the inverter that actually allows us to power everything through the solar panels. And you can see that we have four batteries down there that will allow us to power. We can power everything in the lab from the solar panels for up to 2 hours.
The plan is to install solar energy experiments inside the vehicle for K-12 students to play with. Brown shows me some that are ready to go.
So right here we have one. Oh, I guess you don't really need to show it, but I can show you. This is an experiment to show how one can build a solar panel out of berry juice. So you have the berry juice and then the titanium dioxide. You can just combine them and put them between those two little pieces of glass. And you can create a solar cell and you can hook the multimeter up and see how much energy it's creating.
The experiment mimics the process of photosynthesis. Another experiment is designed for younger students.
And then we have a couple of toys. These are aimed at the really little kids, but it's basically just, this is a toy car. You can see that there's a battery pack, but we've left the battery out, and the solar panel just does exactly what the battery would do. So, but then if you put it in the sun, it goes forever, and you have to chase after it. It doesn't go that fast, mm-hmm. though.
Dr. Varadhan says the idea to use and convert an RV instead of a bus into a mobile lab came from one of her partners on this project, Dr. Randall Overby. Overby is the Electrical Engineering Program Coordinator at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith and helped secure the Winnebago shell for the lab. The project was funded with the help of a $162,663 grant from the Arkansas Energy Office, which is a subsidiary of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission.
That's what funded the vehicle, but it only funded the vehicle and the conversion of the vehicle. We just got a shell of a Winnebago recreational vehicle, 33 feet long. So we had to convert it into a lab and buy all the equipment for the lab. First of all, think about what all the manpower was volunteered. And it was an enormous amount of manpower that was volunteered.
According to Professor Varadhan, she and several of her undergraduate and graduate students, along with engineers from the university's High Density Electronics Center, or HITECH, spent hundreds of hours working on converting the vehicle into a mobile lab. She says that even though her team tried to make the vehicle green in every possible sense, she does have a confession to make.
The Green Mobile itself is a gas guzzler. We really wanted to make it a natural gas-powered vehicle, but we don't have filling stations everywhere in Arkansas, so we can't go to the, you know, far east and far south of the state and not be sure that we could get fuel.
The vehicle is also fitted with a gas generator to provide power in case the vehicle is out on the road for a whole day. Dr. Varadhan hopes the vehicle will make at least 10 to 12 trips a month visiting K-12 students all over the state. She does, however, mention that the number of trips will also depend on the availability of staff to make the trips. Ideally, she hopes to hire a full-time science education coordinator for the Green Vehicle Project. Dr. Varadhan says many schools in Fayetteville and Springdale have already expressed interest in a visit from the vehicle. The goal is to pique the interest of science teachers who can then establish similar, smaller labs in their respective schools.
The long-term plan is that we would have gone to many, many schools at least twice or three times, and we would have convinced the teachers and the school administrators that this is a laboratory worth investing in. And we could help them to put together a lab for a certain age group for $10,000 or less. And I think that's not a very big amount. And then what we will do is we will have a big teacher training workshop. The teachers can also help us prepare, or we can work with the teachers to prepare lesson plans for this. So the plan will be that the teacher will teach the subject in class and then coordinate with the Green Mobile.
The University of Arkansas's Green Renewable Energy Efficient Nanoplasmonic Solar Cell Center, or the Green Center, unveiled its Green Vehicle Outreach Project yesterday afternoon at a ceremony outside of the John A. White Engineering Hall on the U of A main campus. The opening ceremony included remarks by U of A Chancellor Dr. G. David Gerhardt, Dr. Gail McClure from the Arkansas Science and Technology Authority, and J.D. Lowry from the Arkansas Energy Office. The Green Vehicle is an attempt to introduce K-12 students in Arkansas to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields in a fun and interactive manner. Allison Brown, manager of the Green Center, says the plan is to start visiting schools in the region before the end of the current school year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudhokar.
And just ahead on Ozarks, we take a look at a mobile concert series that is powered through sustainable energy. The Trail Mix Concert Tour is back again for Artisphere, the Walton Arts Center's annual Nature and Art Festival. We'll have a preview of which bands will be performing along the trails around Lake Fayetteville and Crystal Bridges in Bentonville in about 2 minutes.
150 years ago, at least 10 Arkansas infantry regiments were engaged in the first great battle of the Western Theater, the Battle of Shiloh, Tennessee, fought April 6 and 7, 1862. By the time the battle ended and the Southern Army retreated toward Mississippi, 10,699 Confederate soldiers were dead, wounded, or missing. These casualties included hundreds of Arkansas troops. The 1st Arkansas Infantry Regiment suffered particularly heavy losses, many during three charges on a sunken road that became famous as the Hornet's Nest. Colonel James Fagan reported that, exposed, facing great odds, with the enemy in front and on the flank, the regiment endured a murderous fire until endurance ceased to be a virtue. The 1st Arkansas suffered 364 casualties at Shiloh. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
It's Tuesday, the first day of May, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's a good thing I still like you.
Is it?
Yeah, Kyle, not so much. But that's another thing.
Because he's gone?
Because he's gone, and he's gone to my favorite place, and I just don't want to talk about it. Let's talk about the Spring Jazz Concert.
Let's talk about it.
With the NWAC Jazz Band tonight at 7 at the Walmart Auditorium on campus in Bentonville. Mm-hmm. And the UA Campus Band and also the UA Symphonic Band perform tonight at 7:30 at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets are $10.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Artisphere, an arts and nature festival presented by the Walton Arts Center, officially kicks off Thursday, and events related to the festival are scheduled through the month of June across Northwest Arkansas. One of the festival's signature events is the Trail Mix Concert Tour. Robert Ginsberg, the host of Shades of Jazz here on KUAF, is also the curator for the Trail Mix Concert Tour. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently spoke to Robert about his plans for this year's event.
Trail Mix is this unique combination of an afternoon stroll slash hike slash music slash entertainment slash circus.
Well, if I'm involved. But it has really become a highlight of this extraordinary Artisphere Festival. And I think people like it because it's outdoors. You can bike, you can hike. There's great music. I mean, we're going to have six bands this year from around the world.
And we should mention this year it's on two different trails.
That's right. This is the first. Every year it's been at Lake Fayetteville. There's going to be 2 days of Trail Mix. So basically what this is you're outdoors. You're either on the trails around Crystal Bridges, which are gorgeous, as you know. That's on May the 5th from 1 o'clock till 3:30. That's Saturday, May the 5th. We're moving the whole show back to Lake Fayetteville on Sunday, May the 6th. Same bands, but, of course, a different setting. Again, though, all of the bands will be out along the trail, out in the woods. All of their energy needs for their instruments and amplification will either be solar-powered or pedal-powered. So it's part of this sustainability theme that Artisphere has been involved with. And we've got an incredible lineup of bands this year. The Pine Leaf Boys are a Cajun band out of Louisiana. Newfound Road is from the Carolinas. They're a young bluegrass band. Bruce Barth, who is an extraordinary jazz pianist who's no stranger to Northwest Arkansas, he's been here with several other bands, and he was here 1 year as part of the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. But he has a project called Bruce Barth's Grateful Jazz Project. More about that as we go. A legendary blues man named Lucky Peterson. Mm-hmm. And then two regional bands, the Old 78s, Curly and Carol Ann, well known in this area, and a jazz samba trio, Trio de Janeiro. So these bands will be strategically placed along these two trails, and as you're hiking, biking, pushing the stroller or whatever, and you will come across these bands out in the middle of the woods. You can hang out and listen, move on to the next one. It's all free, and really an exciting event.
Now, the Pine Leaf Boys, they're a Cajun band. They're going to be coming straight from Louisiana.
Yes, it's a quintet, and it's a great band. I mean, you've got your Cajun accordion and vocals. Wilson Savoy is the band leader. And then Courtney Granger plays fiddle and also sings. John Bertrand on guitar, Drew Simon on drums and vocals, and Tom Davis on bass. And they're a four-time Grammy-nominated band. The New York Times called them the best new energetic and fun Cajun band. And they've done several tours for the State Department as well. They've been to Saudi Arabia, which, you know, just the thought of a really down-home Cajun band in Saudi Arabia and Israel and Denmark warms the cockles of my heart. So a great Cajun band right out of Louisiana.
Lucky Peterson. I mean, we're lucky that Lucky is going to be on this.
This is one of the unsung heroes in the world of blues. I mean,
yeah.
He was discovered by Willie Dixon when he was 3 years old.
I'm trying to tell you, girl, you're in the danger zone. You better look out, 'cause your good thing's about to run out. You better look out.
An extraordinary musician, and I kind of categorize him as a guy like Taj Mahal, who he walks out on the stage, and before he makes a note, there's just charisma pouring out of him. He plays the Hammond B3 organ. He plays keyboards, guitar, sings. He's got a great quartet, and he's really a master of the instrument. And I just thought I would mention also when he was heard with his wife, Tamara, who sings with him now. He was invited to appear with the Levon Helm Band at the Midnight Ramble concert.
Uh-huh.
So the following night they invited him. So it'll be a great, great blues stage.
You mentioned the Old 78s. I've seen them play. They've been in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They don't need solar power. They're their own power, their banjo and whatnot.
You've got that right. That's the best kind of power.
Yeah.
If they had their Wheaties in the morning, they'll be powered.
Exactly.
Anyone that's not familiar with the Old 78s, it's really a great group. They've got two or three recordings that I'm aware of, and their first one came out in 1993. This is traditional American music, classic banjo pieces, old fiddle tunes, just a lot of fun. Well,
Grateful Jazz?
Yeah, let me tell you about this. Bruce Barth, who is one of the great New York City jazz pianists, he was Tony Bennett's piano accompanist for three or four years. He leads his own groups. He's a sought-after sideman. I talked to Bruce about a jazz trio on the trail, and we both agreed that we didn't feel like the trail would be the place for a straight-ahead sort of bebop thing, mm-hmm. although arguably maybe it is. But Bruce told me, and I never knew this, and I've known Bruce for years, he told me several things. He said, first of all, when he was younger, he used to play bluegrass. And he went on to tell me that he also was kind of a deadhead for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually rewrote and arranged a bunch of Grateful Dead music. So Bruce proceeded to send me these studio mixes of this group, and it's great. It's great stuff. And the instrumentation is interesting. He'll be playing outdoors, so it's not going to be a grand piano. It'll be the old Fender Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
which has
mm-hmm.
such a great sound, and a wonderful violinist, classically trained. She plays European classical repertoire, but she's also a world-class improviser. Her name is, coincidentally, Diane Monroe. And she'll be accompanying him. So we've got the keyboard, violin. And then the third member of the trio is Rogério Bogato, who is a Brazilian percussionist and educator. He plays in projects with all of the great leading jazz performers around now, John Patitucci and Danilo Perez, and on and on and on. And he's also collaborated with a lot of the great Brazilian artists. So he'll be playing a lot of percussion and a modified drum set. So it'll be interesting.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Kyle.
Robert Ginsberg, the host of Shades of Jazz every Friday night at 10 here on KUAF, is the curator for the Trail Mix Concert Tour. He recently spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio about the upcoming event. More information is available at artistspherefestival.org. The Trail Mix Concert Tour will take place in Washington County and Benton County, but if you happen to be in Carroll County, you can also experience the arts this weekend as well. This year's Eureka Springs May Festival of the Arts begins today, and it promises a colorful and unique palette of creatives. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich profiles two new art events, one urban, the other wild.
Chris Fisher and John Rankin, co-curators of an ambitious May Fine Arts Festival event they've titled Finding Nature, Artworks in the Landscape, take us to a place they call The Field, where more than two dozen artists are creating large sculptures out of forest debris. John Rankin's dogs, Lily, Otis, and Raven, accompany one with a squeak toy. Here's Chris Fisher.
This is about a three-acre field above Keels Creek, with a really nice, gorgeous view of Cedar Hill across the way at 300 foot higher than where we are. So you have this enormous Ozarks backdrop.
New Orleans native Chris Fisher spends most of his time out of doors. He's exhibited in the Mid-South, photography and assemblages. He's also a professional landscape designer, currently working as an arborist and Ozarks preservationist based in Carroll County. John Rankin is hosting The Field on his land. He lives just up the hill from here. He, too, is a professional photographer who last year was awarded an Arkansas Arts Council Individual Artist Fellowship. The field sculptures are categorized as ephemeral because eventually the work will be crushed by the elements or intentionally set ablaze.
Yeah, and some people are not going to burn their pieces. The dragon wants to stay a dragon, and it would be hard to burn.
A huge skeletal pterodactyl, wings open, keening towards the sky, as if warding off all the strange creatures surrounding it.
Found pieces of branches and trunks that are lashed or gathered into a form meant to just stand for a little while.
Finding Nature has a public launch May 19th with a reception at the Space, number 2 Pine Street in downtown Eureka Springs, through the 26th. The 25 artists will be on hand to talk about their individual site work and this collaborative field project.
The exhibition will present 23 or so artists with physical objects in the space in a gallery setting. A lot of those artists are also doing site-specific installations in town, out at their places, way, way off the grid. We're not even sure where some of these pieces are being made and what they're going to eventually look like. So the artists will, on their own, receive visitors from the gallery on specific days while the show is open to come out to the elsewhere locations and see specific artworks. This, though, is the field where there are 25 or so pieces that will probably be seen.
Featured are Don E. Allen, Steve Beecham, Adrian Frost, Stephen Foster, Judy Griffith, Eleanor Lux, David Pettit, Robert Norman, Jamie Froelich, Richard Quick, Crystal Rust, Lorna Hirsch, Regina Smith, and David Zimmerman, among others.
We have a real spectrum of different media involved. You've got sculptors, photographers, painters, a biochemist who is working on the images of nature on a very micro level. You have an illustrator who is working with heirloom vegetable images. You've got a lady who is pulling briar roots out of the ground and creating figures and a monstrous installation out of those. You've got photographers who are printing ginormous scroll prints of waterfalls that will hang from the 16-foot-tall ceilings of the gallery. And we have one person who's building a cacophony of sculptures in a trailer out in the woods with all these little blue people.
John Rankin has installed a large mobile leading into the field titled Before Calder. And Chris Fisher is engaged at two sites, one an ephemeral water piece on the ledge above Cardinal Spring Falls on the west side of Eureka. You can trace progress on the Finding Nature Facebook site. And what about that intentional blaze here in the field? John Rankin.
May 27th. It's a Sunday, and I just thought near the end of May it would be a wonderful closing, not just for the Art and Nature Show, but also I thought for the May Festival of the Arts. And I would like everyone to come out and just enjoy, you know, their time being here. This was a community effort. I really like this collaborative collective.
And another light will be cast, this time in Basin Park in downtown Eureka Springs, at a reception tonight for the Creative Energy Project, featuring photographer Jeremy Mason McGraw.
So we're headed down the street from where I live now to go to the Basin Park so I can show you where the exhibition is going to be for the entire month of May. A strange Alice in Wonderland element to this place.
Jeremy places an array of photographs on a park bench, intensely colored composite light paintings of Eureka Springs places, taken at dusk and dark, polished with illuminated swirls and strands, each one an interdimensional story.
Creative Energy Project is the sort of the container for it. Electric Vision is this year's exhibit, so if I do another one that's a different theme, I'll title it something different, but it'll still be a part of the Creative Energy Project. Because it was actually more than just an exhibition. It was a series of events.
The images will be stationed around the park and are printed on special paper that refract ambient light, especially at night. Some subjects he staged to photograph, for example, drummer Angelo Yao and his troupe performing one evening here.
So we organized this, except for I brought in a really high-powered black light and encouraged everybody to wear glowing clothes and LEDs and things that lit up. And so we had LED hula hoopers, and we had people just in colorful costumes or with LED Christmas lights around them. So you can see in the picture there's just this sort of sea of UV lit people in the park doing the drumming. And then I had this big 12-foot long stick with kind of these rainbow of lights on them that I just did long exposures with and twirled them through the crowd.
Jeremy McGraw's photographs will be the very first collection of art to be displayed for a full month in Basin Park. He got the idea from a collection he saw in Milan one evening. He penned a proposal to Eureka Springs Parks and Recreation, which consented. The project was also boosted by 11 local business sponsors, which figure in the photos, led by the Eureka Springs Downtown Network.
So the exhibition will start, it'll basically from underneath where the stage is all the way over to the Turpentine Creek building. Every few feet there will be a freestanding frame that'll have a light on it, and the pictures will be displayed in those frames all the way around this perimeter ledge.
Jeremy McGraw has also created an image of what some consider a plague on Eureka, others an economic remedy, a motorcycle in fiery repose.
Yeah, I made it a really evil-looking bike, and so for me, it worked out. People that don't like motorcycles would look at it and go, yeah, bikes are evil, and people that do like motorcycles are like, yeah, bikes are evil. So either way, it works out.
These 20 photographs are sister images to a poster Jeremy created for Mayfest, which was selected by a panel of judges as the winning entry this year. Jeremy McGraw also works on assignment shooting luxury hotel and resort interiors for his company Elite International Photography. His work is published in magazines as well as business portfolios here and abroad. His background in theatrical set and lighting design yields exquisite polished imagery, which he produces in his downtown Eureka Springs studio.
So I use Nikon cameras, and I have a tremendous amount of lighting that I bring with me. So when you look at the interiors of the rooms, it's not natural light. It's all manufactured to sort of give an ideal sense of the room in the morning or in the ideal time of day that it would be met with light.
And unlike his artwork, his commercial digital photographs don't require much adjustment post-production.
I spend a tremendous amount of time rearranging the furniture and lighting everything. We replace a lot of the lighting in the lamps and things like that, put in flashes through the windows. The preparation of the rooms often take 2 to 3 hours just to set up. And when that shot is taken, there's not a lot of work on the other end of it. It's basic color and contrast adjustments, a few you know, getting rid of anomalies, like there might be a reflection or a glare somewhere, but it's pretty much, you know, 90% done in the camera.
Jeremy also shoots high concept photo portraiture with models in artificial spaces using composite vignettes. For example, a beautiful demonic femme bathed in sparks.
After that shoot was over, I went and found a cave wall that I liked and shot that. I brought lights in there and illuminated that. And then all of the sparks are from a mannequin form that I ordered online, set it up, and then took a grinder and showered it with grinder sparks.
Each long spark individually layered into a sparkling shroud. The labored image is part of a portfolio Eternal Beauty with beautiful vamps and demons. In development, of course, as Jeremy McGraw divides his time between specter and opulence. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
An opening reception for the Creative Energy Project will take place tonight from 7:30 to 9 in Basin Park in downtown Eureka Springs. You can find more information at jeremymasonmcgraw.com. Finding Nature will be on display May 19th through the 26th at The Space, which is located at No. 2 Pine Street in Eureka Springs. For more information on that exhibit, visit facebook.com/findingnature. This is Ozarks at Large. Time now for a question. We just heard a story about the Eureka Springs May Festival of the Arts, and that includes the 5th annual Africa in the Ozarks, which is a celebration of African rhythm, dance, food, and culture, and that's from May 3rd to May 6th. Part of the Africa in the Ozarks is an African dance performance Friday at 7 o'clock at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. What I'm giving away today are two pairs of tickets to that performance on Friday. So we will have two winners today. So in order to get a chance to get these tickets, you have to know this. On this date in 1941, the Orson Welles film Citizen Kane premiered in New York. The film tells the story of a group of reporters who are trying to decipher the last word said by a millionaire newspaper tycoon, which the word was Rosebud. It was nominated for 9 Academy Awards, including Outstanding Motion Picture, Best Director, Actor, Writing, Art Direction, Film Editing, Cinematography, Music, and Sound Recording. So my question is, of those 9 nominations, how many wins did Citizen Kane earn? If you have a guess or you know the answer, you can give me a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF. And good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 1st of May, 2012. It was on this date in 1840 the first official adhesive postage stamp was issued in Great Britain. Up until then, the recipient of a letter paid for the postage. But many people refused, and the calculation of postage had to be figured out. Number of sheets of paper, the distance between sender and recipient. And with the adhesive postage stamp, the sender paid, and there was one price. Queen Victoria's picture was on the stamp, and because Britain was the first to use postage stamps, they've never put the name of the country on them, just a picture of the reigning monarch. It's the birthday of Joseph Addison, Wiltshire, England, 1672, along with his friend Richard Steele. Addison was an essayist for the newspaper The Tatler and then The Spectator, essays that aimed to, he said, enliven morality with wit and to temper wit with morality. 1707 on this date, the Acts of Union joined the kingdoms of England and Scotland into the kingdom of Great Britain. They'd had a single monarch for 100 years since Queen Elizabeth I died childless. James VI of Scotland became James I of England. The Acts of Union combined their two parliaments into one. It's the birthday of Bobby Ann Mason, born Mayfield, Kentucky, 1940, raised on a dairy farm. Wrote her PhD dissertation on Nabokov and then set out to write something completely different. She said, since Huckleberry Finn or thereabouts, it seemed that all American literature was about the alienated hero. I was sick of reading about the alienated hero. I'm more interested in people in the mainstream. So she wrote about rural and small-town people in Kentucky. Her first collection was Shiloh and Other Stories. Her first novel was In Country. Her most recent, The Girl in the Blue Beret, published last summer. It's the birthday of Terry Southern, born Alvarado, Texas, 1924, who wrote the screenplay Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And it was on this date, 1931, the Empire State Building opened to the public. Here's a poem for today by Mark Strand, entitled Black Sea. One clear night, while the others slept, I climbed the stairs to the roof of the house, and under a sky strewn with stars, I gazed at the sea, at the spread of it, the rolling crests of it, raked by the wind, becoming like bits of lace tossed in the air. I stood in the long whispering night, waiting for something, a sign, the approach of a distant light, and I imagined you coming closer, the dark waves of your hair mingling with the sea, and the dark became desire, and desire the arriving light, the nearness, the momentary warmth of you, as I stood on that lonely height, watching the slow swells of the sea break on the shore and turn briefly into glass and disappear. Why did I believe you would come out of nowhere? Why, with all that the world offers, would you come only because I was here? A poem by Mark Strand, Black Sea, from his collection Man and Camel, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, now offering social campaigns, a new tool designed to help small businesses turn fans into customers. Learn more at constantcontact.com. And by Reputation.com, offering patented protection for the online reputations of professionals and businesses, now including reputation assessments. Learn more at Reputation.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, time now for the answer to today's trivia question. Before Writer's Almanac, we were talking about Citizen Kane, which premiered on this date in 1941 in New York. The film was nominated for 9 Academy Awards. My question was, how many of those awards did the film win? The answer, just one. It won for Best Writing for the Best Original Screenplay. All right, so I will place the names of all the people who had the correct answer into the ceramic cow, and I will draw 2 winners, and each winner will receive a pair of tickets to an African dance performance as part of Africa in the Ozarks in Eureka Springs. It'll be at the auditorium at 7 o'clock on Friday night. Support for KUAF is provided by contributing listeners and by Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring young professionals, the Fast 15, and networking events, plus other local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com to register for daily business e-news or for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, MENA. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I hope everyone has a great Tuesday.